Ready? Good morning, everyone. 9 o'clock. Happy Wednesday. Another full day agenda of fun and facts and fish and what have you. I'm going to kick off this morning with a presentation from Dr. Anna Mercer from the Cooperative Research Branch. So I'll turn it over to you, Anna. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Salerno. Can you hear me okay, everyone? Excellent. Thank you. First of all, thank you for the invitation to be here today to speak to you about the Cooperative Research Branch at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Anna Mercer. I am both the lead of Cooperative Research at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, as well as the director of the Narragansett Laboratory in Rhode Island. And before I dive into giving some updates on the different projects that we have within the Cooperative Research Branch, I want to first get us all on the same page about what exactly is cooperative research. What are we talking about? So cooperative research, in its essence, is a partnership. It is not prescriptive to a specific topic. It is not prescriptive to a specific region. It is a way to do research. And specifically, cooperative research in fisheries is a partnership between the science and fishing communities, not just in chartering a vessel, but in developing research ideas, priorities, methods, implementing that work, and interpreting and applying those results for scientific and management efforts. And so you'll see in my presentation today several examples of how we do that within the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. And before I dive into the portfolio of specifically the Cooperative Research Branch, I want to take a moment just to recognize that there's a variety of work that happens within the Northeast Fisheries Science Center that has some level of partnership with the fishing community. And I won't be speaking about any of that today, but rather I will be speaking about the portfolio of the group that I specifically oversee, the Cooperative Research Branch. Within the Cooperative Research Branch, we have about 20 scientists located at several facilities across the Northeast, within Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and New Jersey. And the goal of our group, first, is to promote and inform cooperative research throughout the fishing community, make sure folks are aware of the opportunity to participate in research and have opportunities to participate, as well as within the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, promoting a cooperative research approach. As you'll hear in the next several slides, we have several long-term research programs that we operate to address a variety of scientific needs and, again, provide opportunities for contributions from the fleet. And lastly, we really strive to use a nimble and multidisciplinary approach. So we have folks within our branch and collaborators that really cross all sectors of science as well as the fishing community. And that enables us to develop new projects that address new and emerging research needs. And so you'll hear me speak about several examples of those as well. So what you're looking at here is kind of a laundry list of our portfolio as it stands right now. We have four long-term programs as well as a variety of new initiatives. So again, back to those goals of supporting long-term work as well as this nimble multidisciplinary work. And for the sake of time today, I'll be speaking about these projects that you see highlighted in red, which are most applicable here in New England. If you'd like to hear about any of the other projects that you see listed here, I'm happy to share those at a future date. Just let me know. So diving into the first long-term program, it is EMOLT, or the Environmental Monitors on Lobster Traps and Large Trawlers program. This program is going on almost a quarter century, which is incredible. And it engages almost 150 fishing vessels from Maine to Virginia. It's a very impressive program. This program is run by Dr. George Menard within the Cooperative Research Branch. And the goal of this work is to bring fishermen into the process of collecting environmental data, specifically oceanographic data, during their routine fishing processes, so that we can integrate those data into oceanographic models as well as other scientific tools. The way that this program works, so you can see an infographic of this here on the top, as well as a picture of George in the red hoodie there in the middle. Is that the EMOLT team, which is, I should say, well beyond the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. We have dozens of partners in the academic and nonprofit world who support this work, and install two pieces of a system on each fishing vessel, a temperature sensor on either the door or some other part of the fishing gear. We do cover a wide variety of gear types, as well as a mini computer, or what we call a deck box, in the wheelhouse. And you can see a picture of Kyle Grant there on the left, with his little microcomputer right next to his hand there. From there, the captains sit back. They don't have to touch the systems. They have the opportunity to see those data in near real time as their gear are hauled back, as well as to compare the data that they are collecting to the climatology in the past. These data are transmitted directly up into the cloud, where they are made publicly accessible in near real time. In terms of recent achievements, and I've tried to do this for each of our long-term programs in particular to give you a sense of what the focus has really been over this last year, which is about the pace that I'm giving these updates for the council. Over the last 12 months, the program has expanded by 111 vessels. That is a massive expansion, and this has covered, again, vessels all the way from Maine down to North Carolina. This has been a huge collaboration with multiple organizations across the coast to execute this expansion, and we do expect a continued expansion by about another 40 boats in the next 6 to 12 months. This expansion was made possible by a partnership, again, with a lot of our external collaborators, as well as some external resourcing. In addition, of course, to outfitting fishing vessels with this gear, a heavy focus in the last year has really been making the data from eMolt more accessible both to the science community as well as to the fishing community. And so we've done that in two ways. The first is creating a new publicly accessible product rather than just raw data that you can go and pull from the cloud, which is challenging in many ways for many people. And we've created a gridded product that integrates with other industry-based environmental monitoring programs, including the Shelf Research Fleet and the Lobster Jonah Crab and Research Fleet, as well as our Ecomon survey at the Northeast Fishery Science Center, to put together a product called FishBot that you can access and receive the gridded product of in-situ measured bottom water temperatures on a daily basis. You can filter that as you see fit in space and time, and that is updated on a daily basis. So every day you can go in and pull those data that are collected by this program in that gridded format now. We also have been partnering with a lot of our collaborators to develop new visualization tools, both on the deck box and the wheelhouse of these vessels, so that the captains can understand better and really apply the bottom temperatures and other metrics that they're seeing, as well as online. And so there's an example there on the bottom of the Cape Cod Ocean Watch portal, which was developed by collaborators at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, that you can overlay sea surface temperature imagery and compare that to some of our measurements, our bottom temperature measurements from eMolt and other programs. And then lastly, I've had a heavy focus on also developing a lot of international collaboration, both through contributing data to the global telecommunication systems for application of global research and studies, as well as through contributions to the Fishing Vessel Ocean Observing Network. Excuse me. Moving on to the next project, the Gulf of Maine Bottom Longline Survey. This survey is going into its 12th year of operation and is led by Dr. Dave McElroy at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. The focus of this survey is to provide data specifically from areas and habitats that are not accessible to our bottom trawl survey and other mobile gear surveys. And so the focus here is on groundfish and other data poor species. You can see an infographic of how this survey works there on the top. And we have two longtime industry partners in this survey, the fishing vessel the Mary Elizabeth and the fishing vessel the Tenacious II. Both of these captains and owners have been instrumental in designing, operating, reviewing, and interpreting the data from this survey. The survey applies a tub trawl longline, bottom longline approach, and has 45 random stratified stations that are distributed between rough and smooth bottom. You can see the stations that we have planned here for fall of 2025. So this coming fall, we'll start in the second week of October, God willing, there on the bottom, with the yellow areas indicating areas of rough bottom that we're targeting sampling, and the blue areas indicating areas of smooth bottom that we're targeting on this survey. This survey is very nimble, and I am very proud of the team for having completed 100% of their planned stations, not just over the last year, but over almost this last full 12 years. And so real kudos to those team and their work to get the job done and get the job done reliably and on time every season. In addition, of course, to getting the job done, we got to apply the data. And we certainly have done that. Just over the last year, the data has been used quantitatively as indices of abundance for the white hake and wolffish stock assessments and has also been used for 10 other assessments over the last several years as well. We're also working to develop the efficiency of their survey, make sure the survey is efficient and resilient. And so we've been working on a new electronic data collection system that allows the team at C to work efficiently and to minimize any data errors, maximizing data quality. And we also put a lot of effort into making sure we're sharing what we're doing on this survey. So we publish blogs, we publish photo galleries, and make sure we're communicating about the accomplishments of this work. The next project I'd like to speak about is the study fleet, as well as the industry-based biological sampling program, or InBios. This program is led by Andy Jones and Katie Burchard within the Cooperative Research Branch. And the focus of this work is on providing fishermen with the tools to collect detailed information about their catch, effort, the environment that they are fishing in, and providing whole fish samples for really critical life history analysis. This program started in 2007. Currently, we have 49 partners from Maine to New Jersey participating in this program. And you can see an example of one of the data products here, monkfish catch per unit effort index here on the bottom, developed by Andy Jones. This past year has been a little tumultuous for this program, and I won't get into the nitty-gritty. I'll spare you that. But suffice it to say, we have been through contract terminations, reinstatements, lapses, expirations, the whole gamut. I will say our industry partners, whom at many points throughout the year I expected just to step back and say I'm done, have not. They have been really dedicated partners to this work and have really stepped up to adapt and persevere through a time that's been quite challenging for this program. At the same time, we were going through some of these challenges with contracting. We've been working to, again, find efficiency and maximize the data quality of this program by disconnecting the data collection from the electronic vessel trip reporting process. We have had challenges with managing those data and, again, being nimble to science needs because of that tie to regulatory reporting. And so we've moved and now executed a move away from this tie to EVTR. And again, in a time where there were a lot of other challenges, we have worked with those 49 captains and owners to train them in new electronic vessel trip reporting tools for them to use and develop tools to help them make that as efficient as possible. Of course, a major focus of this work is always using the data, and Andy Jones in particular has done a fantastic job of developing methods for catch per unit effort indices, and we have a recently published peer-reviewed publication that details those methods, as well as in the past year, the focus being on monkfish and longfin squid developing indices of abundance for either stock assessment or management purposes. In terms of the biological samples that this fleet has collected, Katie Burchard and others have coordinated the collection of over 10,000 individual specimens from this fleet, as well as from others who have contributed. Those have spanned the entire year and just demonstrate, one, how responsive the fleet is when we call them or text them or multiple times call them to ask them if they're going to get a specific species from a specific area. And it's just a testament to really the partnership and, again, the dedication of the team that we have here. Okay. Moving on to the first of our newer research projects. I'm not going to dive into the detail on this pilot regional industry-based trawl survey, or RIBITS, because I believe Chairman Salerno spoke to you about this yesterday. But I just wanted to kind of highlight the significance of this work in developing a tool for survey resilience in the Northeast, as well as the contributions and the necessity of applying a cooperative research approach in developing this survey. So Jason Morrison and myself within Cooperative Research are working with the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel and the working group, and recently our awarded partners, the Virginia Institute of Marine Science and the fishing vessel, the Durana, are on a phase one pilot of this RIBITS initiative. The focus of this phase one, as Dan said yesterday, is really operational. How do we do this? How much time does it take to finish a station, which helps us to define efficiency and feasibility of completing a more region-wide survey? How do we integrate full oceanographic sampling? How do we conduct day-night sampling on industry platforms? And so over this next year, this team will be working to execute this phase one of RIBETS, and then also working to both design and plan for a potential phase two, which would expand this work from Southern New England, which is the initial focus of phase one, to the Gulf of Maine. Moving on to the second newer project that I'd like to cover, and this initiative focuses on reevaluating the conversion factors for groundfish species and is being led by Katie Burchard within the Cooperative Research Branch. This initiative really stemmed from conversations with our partners in the Population Dynamics Branch, who, as they were operating their assessments, recognized that the conversion factors that they're using to convert the gutted to whole weight for groundfish are many, many decades old. And I think we can all agree that things have changed quite a bit in those decades in the ecosystem and with these stocks. And so it's a good idea for us to update these conversion factors and make sure that we are using the best available science. And so we have done just that by partnering with, at this point, over 15 different groundfish vessels, 10 different fish houses, and some really wonderful partners at the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. We are doing this in two ways. The first component of this work is conversion factors. So again, converting gutted to whole weight fish. That is an essential step in all of these stock assessments. And we're doing this by sailing on commercial fishing trips where our cooperative research scientist is collecting length, weight, and other metrics before those fish are gutted and after they are gutted. So again, we estimate what those conversion factors are. We are doing this throughout the year with a target of 6 commercial trips per quarter across gear types, across areas, across stock areas. It is quite a challenge to coordinate. But the intent is for us to understand at a large scale what those conversion factors are, and also seasonally how those conversion factors change as reproduction cycles move forward. And so you can see some examples here on the plots I provided. In the middle on the right, the red dots there are the currently used conversion factors in these three assessments, cod, pollock, and haddock. And the black dots with the little whiskers are the conversion factors that have been estimated just within the last year for those species. I do want to flag the scale of this, the y-axis scale of this plot. While the differences are significant, or they appear to be so, now that scale is on the tenth of a conversion factor. What I also want to point out here on the bottom, what I'm showing here are the three different species, cod, pollock, haddock, red being the existing conversion factors, and those black dots and whiskers being conversion factor estimates from this project. You can see variation throughout the year, but that is information we haven't had in the past. And there is an ability in many of these stock assessments to integrate seasonally varying conversion factors or length-weight relationships. And so we are at a point where hopefully after this project within the next year, we'll be able to apply some of this work in stock assessments. So this team, as you can see, I won't read through all these numbers, has really been successful at sampling the species and stocks that we are focusing on. It has also been working shoreside with Mass DMF to collect length and weight samples, again, to estimate update those estimates of the length-weight relationships. On the last piece of this program that I really want to highlight is communication back to the industry. It is critical for all of our cooperative research programs, not just to produce science products, but to communicate back to the fleet that we're participating with. And so this program and this team has really focused on developing data summaries that go back to the captains and back to the fish houses that summarize the data that we've collected in partnership with them and explain what it means in the context of the fisheries that they participate in. So I'm happy to distribute those if folks are interested, but just wanted to flag that's also been a focus. And finally, it's been hard to get out into the Gulf, onto Georgia's Bank. So we are looking for partners. There is compensation involved with taking our cooperative research scientist on your vessel. If you are a groundfish vessel or no groundfish vessels who you think would be interested in contributing to this work, please reach out. Particularly, we've had a a little bit of a challenging time getting out on trip boats out onto George's Bank. So again, please reach out if you're interested or have ideas for who we could reach out to. Okay, moving on to the pilot hook and line survey. This survey or pilot survey has completed three seasons of pilot work. And the goal of this work, which is led by Dr. Jason Morrison in the Cooperative Research Branch, is to develop and test the methods, including hook and line and stereo video systems for tracking trends in abundance and demographics, particularly in areas that our other mobile gear standardized surveys cannot access. And we have six fishing vessels that we partnered with from Massachusetts down to Virginia, all who have been fantastic partners and instrumental in helping us design, execute, and really understand what we were learning from this work. We actually have a meeting with everyone tomorrow, all of our captains. And the team has really focused on applying highly standardized hook and line gear, as well as an optic system, a stereo video system, to understand what we can learn about this kind of suite of species, southern New England down through the mid-Atlantic using this tool. This team's completed three seasons of sampling, and during that time covered 378 different stations, observing 35 species on hook and line and 46 with still more to go on our video systems. Our hope and our goal for this, which we will achieve, and we will hold ourselves to that, is to complete the analysis and report for this pilot phase by the end of this calendar year, and have a plan and a proposal for what a long-term hook and line survey would look like, if and when there are ever resources for that. Right now, we do not have funding or resources to move forward with more field work, but again, are focused on documentation and having a shovel ready, peer-reviewed hook and line survey approach to apply, again, if there are resources or desire to do that in the future. All right, moving on to, I believe, the last project, research project that I'm highlighting today. The Recreational Biological Sampling Program, or RecBio, was developed about a year and a half ago in collaboration with Pelagic Strategies, the Kappa Center for Ocean Life, Mike Pierdnock with the Stellwagen Bank Charter Boat Association, Rick Bellavance with the Rhode Island Party and Charter Boat Association, really to pilot the tools to provide the charter fleet to collect scientific data. I think we can all agree that our recreational fisheries are lacking in the data that we really need to do the best science that we can. And so the intent of this work was to develop the tools to enable the captains to collect really critical data specifically for cod and winter flounder. So this team has successfully done that, and over the last year, 12 different captains have collected thousands of Atlantic cod lengths and otoliths, as well as fin clips for genetics. Similarly, for winter flounder, both lengths as well as otoliths, and you can see the map there on the bottom with red indicating the locations of measurements from cod and blue the measurements coming from winter flounder. One facet of this project that I really wanted to highlight today is how this team was nimble in the face of the closure of the southern New England cod fishery. I think we are in a place where there was going to be very limited or no data on that particular stock coming into the closure this spring, but the team worked together to brainstorm ideas, put in proposals for scientific permits, and to be able to continue this sampling, again, with participants in this program, so that we continue to have at least some data on southern New England cod in a time when there is a fishery closure. So just kudos to the team on being nimble, again, and responsive to what was a real challenge, and having been able to address that challenge over this last 6 months or so. Okay, lastly, several of you have been to one of these Northeast Cooperative Research Summits, which we developed several years ago, really in response to you all, who noted that there really wasn't an opportunity where we were getting scientists and fishermen in the room, one, just to meet each other, and two, to share work, brainstorm ideas, and prioritize research. And so we are going into year four of this event, the Northeast Cooperative Research Summit, which includes brief presentations, breakout sessions and discussions, a quantitative research prioritization exercise, as well as ample opportunity for simply meeting people and developing partnerships, which again is the cornerstone of cooperative research. In 2025, we hosted this summit up in Portland, Maine. And in 2026, looking forward, we're very fortunate to have the ability to host this summit in partnership with the Cornell Cooperative Research Program in Riverhead, New York. So we just opened registration for this summit just this week. So if you are interested in participating, if you are currently participating in cooperative research, please join. If you are interested in learning more or engaging more, please join. If you know folks who are want to get engaged and haven't at all and don't have any clue what cooperative research is, please encourage them to come. That is really what this is all about. And so the last thing I want to do just very briefly, I'm not going to get into the details of this, but I just wanted to flag the value of this research prioritization exercise that we do at this summit. So it's really hard to get a sense of what the royal community, the community in cooperative research, identifies as research priorities. And so every year we've done this exercise where we provide each participant with stickers. They put their stickers on a list of topics, and they put their stickers on the ones that they think are priority. So what you're looking at here on this slide is the result of that research prioritization exercise for three years in a row, 2023 on the left, 2024 in the middle, 2025 on the right. And I'm not going to dive into what those priorities are and how they've changed over time for sake of time. But what this allows us to do is make sure we're aligning the portfolio of cooperative research in the Science Center with what the priorities are and how those are changing over time, and not what we are saying are the priorities, but what you all and the royal we are saying are the priorities. And so this exercise will continue to do this, of course, this following year. Really has been really instrumental in helping to guide some of these new nimble projects that we've been developing over the past couple of years. Okay. With that, I just want to note, while I describe this slew of research that we're doing here within the Cooperative Research Branch in the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, there are many, many other groups that are also doing cooperative research in this region. Again, this is an approach, and the more groups and people applying this approach, the more value it has. And so I just want to say thank you to all of the industry partners who are participating in this research, as well as all of the academic and nonprofit partners who are really supportive and actively engaged in cooperative research throughout the region, and really looking forward to continuing to develop and expand this work in the coming years. With that, I am happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Mercer. Lots of information there, lots of great projects I see you guys going on. I'll let other council members think about if they have any questions or not, but I actually want to kind of jump the line here. So one of the projects that you highlighted was this the cooperative research project where you're looking at the reevaluation of some of the conversion factors. And I guess my first question, and some of this is to you and some of this maybe to Dr. Hare as well, is the timeline that you're looking for this. When do you expect to have this project wrapped up, and the expectation of when you actually may start implementing some of these new conversion factors?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for that question. So the project has one more year of operations. We wanted to make sure we were collecting multiple years of data. So if there was interannual variability in conversion factors, we were able to detect that. So we do have one more full year of data collection. But we are already and consistently working with the lead assessment scientists to analyze these data, review these data, and discuss what this means in terms of application to the assessment. So actually, at 10 o'clock today, we have a workshop with our population dynamics branch where we're specifically discussing this. Given the first year of data that we have, what do we think about likelihood of implementing an assessment? What will be the impact, et cetera? So those are ongoing conversations that we'll continue to have over the next year while we continue to collect data.
Thank you. I mean, that's great. I mean, it's great to hear. I'm just a little concerned. I've obviously looked this. I've thought about this. I'm looking at the biological implications, but I'm also thinking about the management implications. As my day job, I live in both worlds, landed versus live weight. And the problems I see, not problems, it's new science, is there's complication factors is that you're going to apply these to assessments, I'm assuming, if these are what we're seeing. The potential is we're going to come up with, well, we were underreporting for at least the 15 years I've been involved with the sector program. So now this has already put a new factor into our stock assessments. But I also point out this is also management implications that sectors, industry, has been reporting at this conversion rate that we currently have. If we bump this number up, and I looked at the numbers, and your graphs are a little small, and it looks about maybe like a 6 to 10% increase. Understand it's just preliminary information. That now means, and I'm focusing on COD because all we ever talk about is COD, but also it's a stock that is at a very low allocation that we have a very high usage of. If we're thinking about applying this and looking at this retroactively, I would probably say that we've now over-exceeded the sub-ACLs in many years. So it's the discussion that we need to have is how this actually does get moved forward. Because also on the industry side, when we think about it, I look at a member's portfolio. This is the information I give them. This implication means is that the 1,000 pounds that they have in live weight actually means less landing opportunity now because you're actually making a lower assessment of what their landed weight is, if you can follow the backwards math on this. Mm-hmm. So in essence, that means less landing opportunity, decreased revenue, but also on the flip side in the lease world, that actually drives up the cost of the lease in itself because although the leases we have to report in live weight, you add that conversion factor to the landed weight, which guys get paid on. So I'm just trying to highlight, and I can go play with the math if anyone really wants to talk about this offline, but I'm just kind of highlighting that just dropping these new conversions in without having a robust discussion on how and when and where these are applied, it's just, and this is maybe not much for you, but I think more around the table for people to understand that this is great science, but there may be some implications that we need to think about moving forward. And with that, I will go to Mr. Smith. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dr. Mercer, for the presentation. I don't actually have a question. I just wanted to take a quick moment to thank you and your team for the work that you do, bringing fishermen and scientists together to try to learn from each other and try to solve problems. I think that you know, those of us sitting around this table and here in the room today are dealing with a lot of really challenging issues. I think it's safe to say that the level of frustration is very high and the level of trust is very low. And I think that cooperative research is a way to try to help bridge the gap there. I've been personally involved in a couple of the projects that you mentioned today, and I just see it as a really great opportunity. I know you mentioned that there were some challenges with the contracting and funding on the study fleet this year. I'm glad you were able to get through, and I just hope that we, the universal we, is able to continue to support the cooperative research program to do the things they're doing now and do more in the future, because I just think it's really important. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you. I agree.
Mr. Pierdock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and not to repeat what Jeff said, but, you know, agree wholeheartedly. You know, this is providing trust by those that are being impacted by these regulations, and they're great examples of, you know, working together cooperatively. Just two quick questions. You know, one expands upon what Dan mentioned about the conversion factors. You know, what I see as a challenge there is that if you have a great database over a number of different years, hopefully you're looking at what's in their gut. And is it herring? Is it menhaden? Is it just crustaceans? If it's crustaceans and then the body weight is a lot lighter, I'm not sure how then you could address that unless you see a lot of repetitiveness in what they're eating and so on. But with change in forage and so on over time, I could find that as a challenge. But I would look forward to, as Dan said, to have that continued discussion. You mentioned the pilot hook and line test. That been conducted. You mentioned Southern New England in the mid, didn't mention Gulf of Maine. I believe it was done in Gulf of Maine. Are you also going to do such in the future, include Gulf of Maine if the funding occurs?
Yeah, so we did include sampling within the Gulf of Maine in the first season of the survey, and the plan that we are developing for a long-term hook and line survey theoretically could be applied across the entire region. Ultimately, that decision on whether that moves forward is above my head in terms of resourcing and prioritization. But theoretically, yes, the approach could be applied across the whole region.
Thank you. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, no more questions from the council. I would go to the public if anyone has any questions for Dr. Mercer and what she's presented. Seeing none, well, thank you, Dr. Mercer. Keep up the good work. I've actually scheduled myself for your next summit because you didn't do a Dover, a council meeting next year, so good to
know.
Thank
you, Kate. for double checking me.
So thank you very much.